I invite you to take your copy of the scripture and open it to Luke chapter 2. And then if you want, you can put your finger there and move over to Matthew chapter 2. We're going to start out in Luke 2, and we're going to look at Matthew 2 as well. And as we do, we're going to take some time to see what God says about this miraculous birth that happened 2,000 years ago. Back when I was in high school, just before the flood, I was part of Youth for Christ and campus life. And one of the things that we used to do is we used to go at the state fair, and in mass we would do these evangelistic forays into the non-Christian community there. There was a place at the Iowa State Fair where I lived called Teen Town. And Teen Town was a place where all the high school kids and college-age kids came to hang out. And we would rent a booth there in Teen Town, and then we would use that booth as kind of a headquarters to go out and witness to friends about Jesus Christ. And one of the things that we used to do is we used to ask this question to break the ice. We used to say, if you were God, how would you change man? Would you do things the same? Would you make him different? Would you put his nose more closer to his back pocket so he can, you know, get there quicker with his handkerchief? How would you change man? What would you do that's different? Would you make him with a larger mouth? Would you make him with two mouths instead of one? Would you give him one eye instead of two? Would you give him two ears, three ears, five ears? What would you do to make man different? And as I looked at Luke 2, which you probably have heard, 7 or 8 million sermons on by now, I decided today to approach it from the standpoint of, if I were God. If I were God, how would I have brought my son to earth? And I find that God did a pretty good job overall. A couple of things I would have probably done differently, but for the most part, he and I agree. Luke chapter 2, verse 1 says this: "It came to pass in those days that a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. And this census first took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria. So all went to be registered, every one to his own city." And one of the things that I decided was that if I were God, I would have established special conditions for the time of Messiah's birth. I would have made it so that everybody should have been right where they needed to be in order to accomplish what Messiah needed to accomplish in coming to earth. If I were God. If I were God, I would have started 500-600 years before, and I would have established some kind of a kingdom like the Babylonian kingdom to first take everybody out of the land of the birth in order to change and modify what was already otherwise a very static society. People living in their traditions and people living in their ways without really understanding God and not being, frankly, very religious. I would have taken them out of the land and I would have given them the opportunity to rethink who they were supposed to be in God. If I were God, I would have set up an organization or a country just like the Medo-Persian Empire, who then brought all those dispersed societies and touched one in particular and united an otherwise segmented Middle Eastern culture. When Babylon took all the people and brought them out of the land, one of the things that happened then about 70 years later was the Medo-Persian Empire brought the Israelites back to the land. But all through the Medo-Persian Empire, there was a very important saying that was given, and that was, it was the law of the Medes and the Persians. The law of the Medes and the Persians was this: if the king said it, it could never be revoked. It could never be brought down. What that did was that united an area of land about the size of Texas with somewhere around 200 different cultures into a number of smaller or larger but small groups of cultures that followed the law of the Medes and the Persians. It took those 200 different cultures and clans that today we call Bedouin and we call Arab and we call Middle Eastern and we call Iraqi and we call Iranian, and it made them into larger clans of people who were centered around properties and populations that had to follow certain laws, the laws of the Medes and the Persians. It united them back together from an otherwise very segmented society. But if I were God, I would also establish an empire that would come in, and in the process of taking over the then known world, it would establish for the world a unified culture, like the Greeks did. The Greeks not only established the culture that they wanted to see accomplished in their empire, but they made a universal language, the language of Koine, or common Greek, to the point where most anybody who lived at the time of Christ knew at least one language, and most of the time two, their native tongue and then common Greek, which was spoken more often probably than their native tongue. And so what they would do is they could travel anywhere in the empire, like we can travel anywhere in the United States, and they could use their common language of Greek and be understood and heard. But if I were God, I would also establish an empire that somehow brought it all together and made it possible for the gospel to be dispersed out through the whole kingdom. Kind of like the Roman Empire did. Remember the words, all roads lead to Rome? The Roman Empire made it possible to travel throughout the whole Roman countryside without worry of bandits, without worry of having to cross boundary lines of cities and countries and lands. And with Koine Greek as part of the culture, they were able to communicate with anybody all the way from Spain, all the way over to India, all the way up to Gaul, which is modern-day Germany, all the way down into Middle Africa, because it was all under Rome. If I were God, I would have established special conditions for the time of Messiah's birth. I would have made it possible for all of the world to be able to hear the story of Messiah. But somehow, that world missed the coming. It's kind of like the year 1809. The international scene was very tumultuous during that time. Napoleon was sweeping through Austria, and blood was flowing freely. Nobody then cared much about babies, but the world was overlooking something, some terribly significant births. Let me give you a few examples. There's a man named William Gladstone was born that year, 1809. He was destined to become one of England's finest statesmen. That same year, Alfred Tennyson was born to an obscure minister and his wife. Someday he would affect the literary world in a very unique manner. On the American continent, a young boy named Oliver Wendell Holmes was born in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And not far away, another young man, Edgar Allan Poe, started his very tumultuous life. And down in Hardin County, Kentucky, in a little log cabin, a little boy named Abraham Lincoln began his life on this earth. Now, if there were CNN in 1809, I speculate that they probably would have been talking about how Napoleon was sweeping across Austria and how blood was just flowing in Austria. I seriously doubt many of those CNN reporters would have been talking about Abraham Lincoln's humble little birth in a log cabin in Hardin County, Kentucky, or Alfred Tennyson's birth to a minister's family. I think that we oftentimes miss the most important events that happen around us. But if I were God, I would try to establish all of the circumstances to make those events important. Not only that, if I were God, I would have established a special place for Messiah's birth as well. Micah 5:2 says, "But you, Bethlehem Ephratah, even though you are the least among the tribes of Judah, the cities of Judah, out of you will come one who is going to rule all the nations." Look at what Luke 2 has to say about that. "Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed wife, who was with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were completed for her to be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. If you understand the intrigue that was going on behind this little move, 35, 40 miles from north to south, to come into Bethlehem for a little baby to be born in a cave out in a field in Bethlehem, you would be amazed at the way God established the place. Because you see, it began 1,000 years before. 1,000 years before, a young man named David was born. He was born the youngest son of 8 to a man named Jesse. But he was destined to be the king over Israel, the greatest king Israel ever knew. David was from Bethlehem. And out of his house and lineage someday would be the one that Sam read about this morning, the child, the wonderful child, the marvelous master, the wonderful counselor, the Prince of Peace that would be born to us out of the lineage of David. But you know, just a few years before all of this was happening in Jesus' family's life, there was a power struggle, and a man named Julius Caesar came to the power in Rome. Before that, Rome was kind of a democratic type of society, but when Julius Caesar came to power, he became the first emperor of Rome. And suddenly, the Roman Empire, or the Roman country, moved from democratic country to empire, to monarchy. He was later assassinated, but Octavian, his son, or his nephew, became the new emperor of Rome. In order for an empire to be able to function, they have to have money. And typically, empires need greater armies than most democratic countries because they have to find support to keep themselves afloat and to keep people from being able to do the things to them that happened to Julius Caesar, that is, assassination. And so one of the things that Octavian did almost immediately after becoming emperor was he decided in order to get more money, he would have to levy taxes. In order to levy the taxes, he had to know how many people he had. He had to know what people he had, how much they made, where they lived, where they were from, and what kind of jobs they had. And so what he did was he sent out a registry edict, and he said, I want everybody to go back to the hometown of their lineage, where you are from, and I want you to establish your lineage. I want you to tell us who you are, how much you make, and I want you to be prepared then to pay taxes on that. And because of the intrigue of Rome, Jesus' stepfather and mother were sent to Bethlehem, where he was destined to be born. Jesus was sent there before his birth because an emperor thought he was in control. But in truth, it was God who was in control. And frankly, I think God did this pretty well. If I were him, I would have established a special place for his birth. But not only that. If I were God, I would have established a special display to proclaim Messiah's birth. Look at verse 8. Now there were in the same country shepherds living out in the fields, keeping watch over their flock by night. And behold, an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were greatly afraid. Then the angel said to them, "Don't be afraid, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which will be to all people. There is born to you this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord. And this will be a sign to you. You will find a babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger." And suddenly, there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill to men." I don't know about you, but I think God did that pretty well. He could have sent the message through some earthly messenger, but he didn't. He sent the message through his angels. No doubt. There was no doubt in the shepherds' minds that this was a message from God. And I can't help but believe that anybody who was in the area of Bethlehem, or frankly in the area of Jerusalem, would have to wonder what the great noise was over the shepherd's field that night. There had to have been an unbelievable proclamation of who God was. God did that pretty well, didn't he? He just seemed to have it all together, didn't he? Now, here's the point that I struggle with, though, the next one. This is where I disagree with God. Because if I were God, I would have brought every important person to worship Messiah's birth. Look at chapter 2, verse 15. So it was when the angels had gone away from them into heaven that the shepherds said to one another, "Let us go now to Bethlehem and see this thing which was come to pass, which the Lord has made known to us." And they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. Now when they had seen him, they made widely known the saying which was told to them concerning this child. And all those who heard it marveled at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. Then the shepherds returned, glorifying God and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen as it was told to them. You know what the problem with that is? Shepherds weren't held in very high esteem by this time in Israel's history. David was a shepherd, Moses was a shepherd, Abraham was a shepherd, Lot was a shepherd, but shepherds by the time of Christ were considered people who were of somewhat questionable character, especially shepherds who had to watch the flocks at night on the hillside. And if I were God, I wouldn't have given the proclamation to a bunch of lowly shepherds. I would have been the angel that came into Herod's bedroom, standing at the foot of his bed, waking him up, tapping him on the toe. "Hey, Herod, got news for you. There's a new king in town." If I were God. If I were God, I would have been in Octavian's bedroom saying, "Hey, so-called emperor, there's a new king in town." Instead, God sent a bunch of shepherds to witness the birth. And later he sent some wise men. Look at Matthew chapter 2. "After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, the wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have come to see a star in the east and have come to worship him.' And when Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and the scribes and the people together, and he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born, and they said to him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, 'But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod, when he had secretly called the wise men, determined from them what time the star appeared, and he sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go and search carefully for the young child, for when you have found him, bring back the word to me that I may come and worship him also.' When they heard the king, they departed, and behold, a star which they had seen in the east went before them till they came and stood over the place where the young child was. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced and were exceedingly great joy. And when they had come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary, his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they opened their treasures, they presented gifts to him of gold and frankincense and myrrh. Then, being divinely warned in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed to their own country another way." If I were God, I would have brought a whole different host of witnesses to see the Christ child. But he sent a bunch of shepherds and then a bunch of guys from out of town to see the Son of God. What does that mean to us? What should be the faith lesson for us today? Well, I can give you three. Number one, they come in the form of questions. In light of the way that God developed the birth of Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago, what would your gift to Christ be? You see, because when God said this, "I'm going to establish my kingdom, and I'm going to establish it through a son." And in Isaiah 9, he said, "Unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. The government will be upon his shoulders, and be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." He was giving a gift to the world that was beyond compare. And the response of many who witnessed the birth of the Christ child was this: we must give something in response to this truth. For the shepherds, it was proclaiming the Word of God and the fact that the things that had happened around them to everyone that they met. For the wise men, it was a gift of gold and frankincense and myrrh. The gold, as you know, speaking of his royalty. The frankincense, speaking of his priestly robe. And the myrrh, of his humanity and death. What gift do you bring? What gift do you bring in response to this proclamation today? Is it something that proclaims his royalty? That someday every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord in heaven and on earth and under the earth? Is it in response to his priestly role? The fact that we don't have a high priest who is unable to understand our problems, our hurts, our pains, our temptations, but who was in like manner tempted as we are, who then gives us the confidence to say that I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, who, because he was tempted like we are, can say there is no temptation that has overtaken you, but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you were able, but with that temptation will make a way of escape also. That's the priest we have in Jesus. Or is it his humanity? That we are to be like-minded with him, being conformed even to the point of death. That we want to know him and the power of his resurrection, the fellowship of his suffering, being conformed even to the point of death. That Jesus didn't think that it was robbery with God to be equal with God, and we're to have that kind of a mind, that we will humble ourselves, that even to the point of coming from the throne room of heaven and becoming like man, that we would be that humble. What's the gift that you bring in response to this truth? Secondly, I would ask, what have you overlooked this Christmas? In December of 1903, after many attempts, the Wright brothers were successful in their flying their machine off the ground. They were thrilled about this, so they wired their sister Catherine in Cincinnati, Ohio, and they said, "We have actually flown 120 feet. We'll be home for Christmas." Catherine hurried to the editor of the local newspaper and showed him the message. He glanced at it and said, "How nice, the boys will be home for Christmas." And he totally missed the fact that for the first time, man had flown. What are you missing this Christmas? In 3 days, we celebrate one of the most momentous events in history. An event in history that changed all of history. We quit counting history the same way because of Christ's birth. And most people are wrapped up in presents and wrapped up in rush and hurriedness. Got to get to the mall, got to get to the store, got to have the right food, got to have the right clothes, got to have the right situation. And they're running right by the child in the manger. Thirdly, I would ask you, what would be your response to Christ's birth if you had been there? Would it have been awe at the Son of God, as the shepherds had? Or would it have been indifference to his coming, like Herod? In 1935, a young man named John Ramsey in Queensland, Australia, found a big rock in his backyard. It was real shiny, it was black, and he thought it was a beautiful rock. And so he brought it into his dad, and he said, "Dad, I found this rock. I think it may be valuable." And his dad said, "No, son, it's just a big black rock." He said, "But you know, it's big enough I'm going to use it as a doorstop. And so he put it out on the veranda and held the door open with this big black rock. 9 years later, John's father had a friend come over and say, you know, that rock looks to me like it may be some kind of jewel, may have some worth. And Dad listened, took it and had it appraised, and found out that it was a black sapphire, 1,100 carats. They cut the black sapphire into a star sapphire, the largest in the world, 753 carats. At the time, in 1944, it was sold. John's father sold it for 6,000 pounds and bought a new house with it, with the money. That black sapphire went on sale this week in Los Angeles for $90 million. And for 9 years, it was a doorstop. What in this Christmas has become a doorstop that should be very precious to you? What this Christmas have you missed about the preciousness of the birth of Christ? And you've diminished its value because you've missed the most important event in history. What is your doorstop this Christmas that is stopping you from seeing the precious birth of Jesus?